I would like to welcome everyone. This is Your Journey. I'm Jenna Messenger. I'm Specialist Learning Disability Nurse in Mental Health in our Specialist Learning Disability Service. Today I have Sharon, who's come to join us, who is a parent of one of her children who joined us on the sibling group that we ran from our service in CFHD. And I'm really excited to hear from Sharon, learn about what she felt the sibling group did for her child, what it's like as a parent, and just be able, hopefully, to share these experiences and stories to help other parents and carers and young people know that we do understand the impact for siblings when you have a sister or brother with a learning disability, and hopefully be able to offer some hope and thought for the future, how we can support. Sharon, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so grateful.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Would you be able to just share a little bit about your family, what you feel comfortable and what led to the sibling group, please, of your little one attending, or not so little?
Yeah, of course. So I have two children. One of my children has a severe epilepsy and a severe learning disability. She has something called Lennox-Gastaut syndrome. So she has very frequent seizures. And she's 11 years old, but cognitively round about 18 months. Mm-hmm. She's hilarious, great fun. Everyone loves working with her. We have a lot of fun with her, but obviously that comes with challenges. And my other daughter is now 14. She was 13 at the time of the siblings group. And she's amazing. She's a young carer. She has had a lot to deal with since she was 4 years old, when my other daughter had her first seizure. So over the years, she's witnessed many, many seizures, lots of difficult, challenging behaviour. And also, you know, we all have a lot of fun together, but I think the pressure is there as a sibling in a way that it's not for other typical siblings. So I think it's quite a unique situation.
Could I ask, when you said as a young carer, what do you see as a young carer for your eldest child? What does that look like?
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think we often think carer and we think just doing chores. And she does do that. She absolutely does. She will help with seizures. She helps cook her sister special ketogenic meals because she's on the ketogenic diet. She is amazing at helping her when she decides to not move, when we're out and sit down in the middle of the pavement. My older daughter will be the one that can somehow distract her out of that. So all of those things of the doing. But I think I've considered this before, and I think sometimes being a young carer is about the things that you don't get to do. So, you know, we don't get to go out for a meal as a family. We don't get to go to the cinema as a family. We can't go abroad. There's a lot of things that we don't do. So I think being a young carer is a combination of doing stuff and often stuff. I mean, I've listed there some very practical things, but often it's just being around all of the noise and all of the chaos and still functioning. You know, that it's a huge thing. You know, the fact that she can come home and get her homework done in sometimes really difficult circumstances is a real achievement, and I think lots of those things get lost, and I think often the young person might not realize that because she's not really known any different, and I don't think she knows sometimes how different perhaps her life is, because I've asked her a few times and she'll say, I just don't know any different. But I think it's important for us as carers and as professionals to be doing that looking out for and making sure that vision is put in place.
Do you think you've had that support for your daughter throughout the time, as like you said, she was 4 years old when she saw the first seizure? Did you feel there was that recognition at that time of her in her own right as a sister who was experiencing a different life than what you were envisioning? Was there that conversation, like you said, from professionals, or did you find that came later?
It was considered in things like social care reviews, because that informs us having support so that we can have respite as a family. But in terms of direct support to my daughter, not really. We were referred to Young Carers, which is a fantastic organisation. However, I think it can be quite difficult, because this is actually a unique caring experience because it's a sibling. So there is a lot caught up with that. And that's very different. And I don't think it's any harder or any easier than having perhaps a parent who needs support. But it is a different experience. And so I think often, you know, in young carers, you're not necessarily among people that get it quite in the same way. And then, of course, within that, there are young carers of siblings that might have different types of disability. So they might have a physical disability, and that's really different to having a learning disability. And that's different again to having seizures. So while we can't have loads and loads of fragmented groups, I do think we need to tune into the fact that these experiences are very different between siblings. So essentially, no, there's not been any specialist support until siblings group.
And you were saying honouring those experiences, and it's interesting when you did point out about honouring what a young carer is, but in the different roles that may be. And actually, it made me think of connection, because like you said, the young carers, you might have carers who are caring for a parent, but that's different from a sibling, and like you said, and a learning disability, or if they're having seizures. So that honouring that experience and connection in its own right. Has your daughter been able to meet other young people before she came to the sibling group in other peers who have a sibling with epilepsy or learning disability, or was that the first time, or has she had that experience with other young carers in her own right, in her experience?
So the school did do one young carers meeting, but again, I don't know how. I think actually, I believe she did meet one person in that had a sibling that sounded similar to her sibling, and she focused on that. But other than that, no. And this was the very first time that she was among people that had siblings with learning disabilities.
What difference do you think it made by her having the opportunity to have peers who had experience or living with the experience of having a sister or brother with a learning disability, do you think?
So it's interesting, this one. I can only really imagine it, because like a lot of teenagers, she's not that forthcoming with information.
Yes.
And what I did know and what I saw was that every single week that this ran, she was really keen to go. And that's quite, you know, that was enough for me to know she was getting a lot from it, because she just would say, oh, there was no feet dragging. She was keen and happy to go. So I think she got a lot from it. I guess relating it to my own lived experience, I can only relate it to the feeling that I have when I meet other people that I deem to be similar to me, to have children similar to me. And again, that is different, because again, lumping together all disabled children often isn't very helpful, because there will be people that might be dealing with the challenges of a child on a ventilator or tube feeding, people that might be dealing with challenges of neurodivergence, and people that really, when, for example, children with a very severe seizure condition, it feels like a breath of fresh air, because you think, oh, these are people that truly get it. And I think we're not brilliant in society at actually teasing out those different types of disabilities and different types of conditions. And sometimes it's like, oh, here's a parent carer support group, and you go along and you just think, oh, but this is so different, because, you know, their children are different to my child, and we don't have the same challenges. And just because our child's children are considered disabled, it doesn't mean that we're going to be sharing the challenges. So I think when you actually, in this case, look at siblings of children with a learning disability, that's a really unique thing. And I think that's really powerful. And I know that I believe conversations were had about perhaps the frustrations of being in the town, and the child will, you know, mm-hmm. and their sibling might struggle, or those kind of things are unique to that particular profile of disability, I suppose. So yeah, I think actually recognizing these differences is really important. And I think sometimes with services or policies, we can just think, oh, disabled children and just one big group. And actually, yeah, that in itself is really, it can be very unhelpful. So I think, yeah, it's finding people that are really in that similar situation. So I can imagine that that felt like, mm-hmm. hopefully, a breath of fresh air for her, because it's not something she would have had the opportunity to do before.
And I was thinking, when you talked of the seizures, there's going to be other parents and carers who have their child who have seizures. And I was thinking, at 4 years old and seeing that, and I don't want to re-trigger too much, but just wonder, Sharon, have you got any, you look back and think of any advice of any parent or carers going through that who has a daughter or son who may witness that, what you think can help? Because that must be really scary, and you're having to focus to keep one child alive, but you're also so thoughtful of your other daughter and son and what they're seeing. And do you think there's things you think, oh, I wish professionals could have considered or helped, or we learnt this or this works? Is there anything you could share that might help other parents and carers think about that with their sibling, as we will call them?
Do you know, I think the first thing I'd say, and this is slightly to one side of your question, mm-hmm. is to other parent carers that have witnessed their child witnessing their other child have a seizure, is just don't feel guilty about it. You cannot prevent this. It's not your fault that they've seen this. I can't control where and when my child has a seizure, and if my other child happens to be in the room, unfortunately, I think initially I felt this huge surge of, oh my gosh, I don't want her to see this, get out of the room. And I remember her fairly early on, I believe she said to me, I don't want to be pushed away, I don't want to say don't look, because I think that's almost more scary for her than, and again, it's really important to say here that every single child's different. This might not be, this was what worked for her, it might not be the case for another child, but she wanted to feel involved, she wanted to know the stuff, she wanted to be told what was going on. And actually, I think sometimes she said, if there is a seizure, I would like it, rather than you and daddy being with her sister, she would like it if one of us went with her, so there was somebody with her supporting her, rather than two of us looking after the child that's having a seizure. And you know, your natural instinct is to just deal with what is often a very serious situation. But actually, that's another thing that we made sure to do. So it wasn't necessarily about her always wanting to watch the seizure or be in the same room, but she wanted someone with her. She didn't want to be felt like she was pushed out of the situation. And then from there, you know, I guess, what would have been fantastic is some sort of intervention at that point from somebody mm-hmm. that could have had a chat to her about what it's like seeing your sibling have seizures. I don't know if that exists, but I do believe actually at the time, actually, this is a bit further on. It was when she was around 8 years old. Young carers did provide one-to-one support for her, which was actually brilliant. And actually it was during COVID, and so the person came and sat in our garden with her, and at that point our other child was having very, very serious amount of seizures. She was having around 700 seizures a day and dropping to the ground every minute or two. So these were small seizures, but they were seizures that would just drop her to the ground like a puppet with her strings cut, so we had to hold her on a harness. So for my 8-year-old witnessing this stuff, I was really scared about the impacts. So that was actually great. Young carers did provide that one-to-one person, and I think they did a bit of art and drama therapy with her, so she wasn't feeling like she just wanted to be talking about the seizures or about the situation, but there were some really clever things that the person did. And they actually did, when they did the drama therapy, they noticed that she really opened up a lot more. And the person that worked with her suggested to me that perhaps we look at some drama classes for her, and we did, and she has been going now for, well, she's 14, so she's been going for 6 years to drama, and she loves it, and that's a real outlet for her. So it took that person, I think, to come in for her, and just that, a lot of it really wasn't about what was done, what was said, even though I'm sure all that was brilliant. A lot of it was somebody just saying, this is for you, this is about you. And is, you know, I think you touched on it earlier, Jenna, but just somebody saying, we know this is really, really tough, and this is a service for no one else, it's just about you. And somebody is coming out and sitting down with you. That's all it's about. And that was really powerful. And so, yes, anything like that, I think, can be extremely helpful, but I do appreciate that it's not always easy to engage those services. And then the other thing that we've tried to do throughout, and again, this is what works for our child, not necessarily for all children, but is we've been really quite open about everything, about appointments, about medications. It's very sort of transparent, and we're very clear about it. And I think she's found that quite helpful. She has, it's not felt like a scary mystery. And you know, so we do try and have those open conversations, and there's nothing really that we try and sort of for her. And for her, that's worked well, but it might not be appropriate for everyone. But for her, that seems to have been helpful.
I think that's it, is you were saying, like, it's honouring again, and not, we always really thoughtful about not saying, this is, go work, like you said, for your child or young person, because they are individual. But it is thinking about, we constantly, as parents or carers, whoever we are in this world, if we have young people in our lives, we want to naturally protect them. And sometimes we think if we don't give them that information or try and shield it, we're protecting them. But actually, like you said, what we do hear from young people often is it comes more scary, because they're like, well, what's happening? I know something's happening. And like you said, we do take it on an individual basis. But we were talking about in one of our podcast episodes about bereavement and grief, and we were saying again, it comes almost more scary unknown, and it's just being able to acknowledge and embrace the feelings that come up. But there was also something about support and having that access that I just wonder if we need to keep raising this profile for siblings, like you said, that hearing and seeing in your own right that you're feeling, and but sometimes not going, we're going to focus on that, we just broaden it. And it feels like we know that your daughter likes drama, and that someone saw that and found a way to come out. Yeah. But go, we yeah. see you in your own right. It's huge in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's just an example of a brilliant professional that is obviously in exactly the right job.
Yes.
You know, just did that. And yeah, so what we have a legacy from that support, because she was able to identify something that would be ongoing support. And you know, this is it's a mainstream drama group, it's not for siblings, it's not specifically that, but it's something that's for her, and it allows her to kind of be someone else for a couple of hours each week. Yes. And that's a powerful thing.
It's that not losing your identity of who you are, because we can have so many labels attached to us, so many roles that we fulfill in life. And then it's about going, who am I still? What do I enjoy? What makes me as a human being? And like you said, just that space. And then it feels to me there's also that space of connection and experience of, like you said, not grouping people together in an overarching, like you said, your child has a disability or your sibling has a disability, but finding that niche connection where you can appreciate and understand each other. But teenagers have their own way of doing that, and finding what that looks like too is, yeah, something I'm thoughtful of than just going, we're going to clump you together and, you know, you're going to connect, because that can be tricky at that age too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the teenage years are a tricky one to navigate. And I think, yeah, as far as possible, being led by what they want to do. Yes. And yeah, I think that can be a powerful thing.
do you find with your daughter, is she able to share with her friends about her sister, or do you find that something she finds only with trusted people? It's something in the sibling group that we had different responses from the young people who came, that some of their peers hadn't received it in the way that they hoped, and so that had been difficult. So just wondered, has your daughter found that in her peers, or does she find that she doesn't want to share so much of that part of her life?
Yeah, I mean, I think it varies. She's extremely fortunate. We're very fortunate. She has a lovely, lovely bunch of friends. And many of those friends have been friends from primary. So they've been at our house and seen her sister and kind of grown up with it as well. So that's lovely. Yeah. But when she has gone to secondary and met new friends, I think she's kind of lightly told them about it, but it's not something she dwells on or makes a big deal about. Yeah. And recently she had her birthday and she had a bunch of friends round to the house and her sister was there and everyone was just, you know, thinking that her sister was super cute. And, you know, they were all having a very sweet time. And I think she seemed OK with that. I think that was all fine. So, yeah, I think she lightly talks about it, I would say, which is, I think, you know, seems to be a relatively healthy thing to do. It's not something she particularly hides. It's just how it is. In fact, actually this morning, to give an example on that, her sister will just what we call go to ground, so she'll just sit on the floor and just refuse to do anything, and she's largely non-verbal as well, so there's no, we really struggle with things like, you know, a little bribe of come on, get up, and then because she doesn't understand. So she sat in front of the front door and Tabby snapped a photo and said, is it okay if I send this to my mate and say I can't get out the door? Which was really sweet. It was also very sweet that she asked me to consent for her sharing a picture with a friend, but she wanted to show, this is my reality. I am going to be late because I can't get out my front door because my 11-year-old sister is is blocking it and I can't open it. So that was, it was quite nice that it was able to be sort of humorous and, you know, So that was it. So yes, that just came to mind. So I think it is an open dialogue with her friends, which is lovely, really. Yeah.
How do you think as a parent and carer, like you said, secondary school's huge. And for some of the siblings, they may be having new friendships, new people, and there might be some anxiety for some young people about, how do I bring my new friend home for the first time, and my sibling, like you said, we have, you know, like you said, just different presentations that we have. We have some young people who may spit, some who might smear their poo, some who might make different noises. It's so much, like you said. Is there anything you would say to a parent or carer whose child comes to them and says, like, I want to bring my new friend home, but I don't know how to do it, or how to, they might respond or things, or I'm worried they're going to do this? How would you maybe think you would guide that conversation? Or like if Tabby came to you and said, oh, I'm really embarrassed that my sister's doing this, and just any thoughts you have. Again, I appreciate we're talking generally, but just anything you think would maybe help another parent or carer who may find themselves in that position.
Yeah, sure. Sorry, the connection's slightly bad. So apologies to you and to listeners who might be struggling a bit with this. it's difficult, isn't it? Because I only have my very, very limited lived experience. But in the way I would personally approach it, would probably be to encourage my child to have a conversation with their friend first about it. So that, you know, the child that's coming around knows what to expect. And I think we had and maybe just seeing how they would like us to be when their friend arrives. So we had the other day a new friend that had not been to the house. And I said, oh, you've not been to a house. I should probably just let you know about, and then the name of the disabled child. And, you know, she'll do this. Don't worry. She'll, you know, she'll grab your hand and take you over there. And you know, I just gave them a quick briefing. And you know, also perhaps, you know, if you've got any questions, like reassuring the child that's coming around, but also making sure that your child is okay with you talking to their friends. Because again, with some teenagers, they're like, you're so embarrassing. Can you not do this? So that's what my daughter feels like a lot of the time, I think. So I just have to be a bit careful. I don't, you know, embarrass myself and her by trying to intervene. But I guess just talking about how it could be best be done. And yeah, I think that's it. And maybe just sort of saying that and explaining some of the reasons. I think it's, I don't know if it's easy, it's possibly different, isn't it, between the age groups, because I would like to think that children of secondary school age will by that time have some sort of understanding that, you know, there are children with disabilities and these can look different and this might be what they do. Certainly for, in the case with all of my daughter's friends, they've been absolutely wonderful and very keen, like many adults are, to just do the right thing, say the right thing, be understanding. And, you know, I've said that knowing full well there's not a right thing to do and not do. But, you know, there's a willingness to accept and to, you know, embrace this situation, which I think is lovely to see, particularly in young people. And what I always remind myself as well is actually for all the young people that come to our house, this is such a valuable learning experience for them. And for the friends that have grown up with my daughter, they've grown up with, you know, seeing my other daughter as well. And I think not a lot of people get that privilege to experience life alongside a person, in our case, with, you know, with a learning disability. Yes. And actually, that's a huge privilege. And it's amazing, amazing life lesson, you know, amazing for lessons in life. So, yeah. Yeah, it's a difficult one. It very much depends on the individual, doesn't it?
It does. What made me think when you were talking was from primary age, that acceptance and growing up and understanding. And it made me think, do you think there's something that if it was in the curriculum that we learnt about differences and that we are different and our bodies can be different and our brains may be different, and how that presents, actually, is it, if we have this at a much younger age where we are more accepting of the world before we start seeing differences, I just wonder if that makes a difference in itself just earlier and making this almost normal experience, and it kind of that helps. And like you said, the connection that we just connect then as human beings, and this is my sister and things, because that I wonder makes a difference if we just started earlier with knowing that we're all different and we show up in life differently with different needs.
I think you're right, and I think we as society fail a bit when it comes to that. I think we do try to talk about people with disabilities, but often you'll see that representation. And I guess this probably works pictorially, but it might be a wheelchair user. And that's great. And that's really important to know that about accessibility. But I think what I would say is there does seem to be a real lack of understanding for, and I mean this actually for all ages, and we probably need some better information on this from earlier age, is, in my experience, severe learning disability. So there seems to be a real struggle. If my child is lying in the pavement, for example, people will come, you know, I've had people saying, oh, well, can you get her to move? And I say, well, no, I can't, because she can't understand me. So I can't say, oh, I tell you what, get up and we'll go and buy you a bag of sweets. I can't do that. So so then I've had people say, oh, no, I know. And I say, she's disabled. And then people will say, I know, but I need to get past you. Can you just get her to move? And it's like, again, I can't. And I think people really struggle to understand that if you have a child that looks typical, that they can have a brain that isn't, and they can, the level of processing is not there. And so, and I've had this so many times over the years that, oh, can you just, would she like this? Or would, and it's just, she's just the, she's just not going to understand. So, and so I think there does seem to be a lack of awareness among that, among the public, about severe learning disability. I think people think, oh, most people can do this or that or the other. And I think there's a lot of awareness now around autism and sensory needs. Mm-hmm. And again, really great. But I think people think, oh, well, I understand that. I understand what it means to use a wheelchair. Well, not what it means to use a wheelchair, but I understand that some people are wheelchair users. But the severe learning disability just does not it's just people just aren't aware of it. And I think people continually expect my daughter to be able to do more than she can. And I would say, bringing this back to a sibling point of view, my daughter's written about this before, my older daughter, but one of the biggest challenges she finds is the stares in public and how other people are with us. So that for her, and you can only imagine as a teenager, that kind of humiliation, that public scenes in public, those are, I mean, they're enough. My heart rate is just going so high if we're stuck in a situation in public and we've got people staring or tutting or whatever. And I also feel defensive and angry that people aren't understanding. So I've got all this going on. And then for my daughter, as a teenager, that is really, really tough. And so I think that's probably one of the things she finds toughest in her sort of position as a sibling. And so, yes, there is this lack of awareness, it is a problem. And yeah, I would like to think that somehow we could bring that more firmly into the curriculum and into our understanding of what disability is. And I think learning disability does not get the airtime that it should. It just doesn't. There's a wonderful book, actually, which I will just give a plug to.
Yes, please do.
And it's by a guy called Stephen Unwin, who is the father to a child with an adult with a learning disability now. And it's called Beautiful Lives. And it's purely about learning disability. And it's quite a hard read. It starts off talking about how people with learning disabilities have been treated through time. So I don't even need to really go into how hard that would be to read. And it is a tough read, but it's a really important one. It brings it right the way through to, and it's quite academic to start with. And then it comes right the way through to, to how people with learning disabilities are treated today. And I just think it's a really important conversation to have, and one that we just are not talking about enough. And I think we just need a little bit more information on that, and I think people, whether broadcasters have their disability slots and they're like, right, well, we've covered disability because we've done this, and I think sometimes there's a lack of understanding about the range of disabilities that there might be. And there is, and quite rightly, a big focus on neurodivergence, and that's really important. Yes. It's very, very common. So of course there would be a focus on that. And severe learning disability is more rare, but I don't feel it gets the airtime and attention that it does need. I think there's a huge education job to be done on that through, I'd like to think that, that everyone gets some exposure and to information around this. There is also one other thing I will recommend that I would love everyone working with children with learning disabilities to watch. And you may have already watched this, but it's actually a sitcom and it's called There She Goes. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's on the BBC. David Tennant plays the dad and Jessica Hines, yeah. She plays the mother. She won a BAFTA for her role in this, and it's absolutely wonderful. It was written by somebody who is a comedy writer who himself has a child with a learning disability, and it is a sitcom. It is funny, but there are also some really very heart-wrenching moments in it. So it's definitely a watch for anyone when you're feeling in a fairly, I would say it's so educational.
Yes. Thank you.
I just got cut off then.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think that's, it's always good to hear from parents and carers about recommendations. I think it's really good to hear you consider professionals, because I think we show up in so many different areas of your family's lives. And like you were saying, I'm trained as a learning disability nurse, and when you talk of the history of people with a learning disability, I mean, that's a whole episode in itself and longer about why I'm so passionate about the work I do, because I have worked with people of adults who are much older with learning disability, and the impact of care that came before that we would not be ever, I hope, doing, but there's so much from that, like you said, so it's really passionate. But I'm thoughtful there are professionals in hospitals, like you said, who may not have come into counter with somebody with a severe learning disability, so where we can help them to have some understanding about who people are in a different way, I think it's really important to raise confidence, to be able to talk, to not be scared or not know how to approach, and just understand and still go, you're a human being, just need to be able to be meeting in a different way. So those recommendations are just brilliant, so thank you. The other bit I was thoughtful when you talked to professionals and thinking about your daughter and exams, because that was something that came up in the sibling group, as you said at the beginning, about homework, and just wondered what your, there's two parts, there's one, I wondered how you help your daughter navigate exams and homeworks in a home where you also have your other daughter who has her needs, and then any thoughts you would have for any school professionals, anyone who listens from there, that you would say, these are things I wonder could maybe help supporting children who have siblings with those extra needs, that you would say could help, because it was a real strong theme that came through when I was in the sibling group about, I've got this homework to do, I've got exams, it's, my life is really going to be, what's it going to be if I don't do it, but my sibling, like you said, has been taken to hospital last night, and there's so much they're trying to navigate. So I just wondered, what do you think as families can help, and also what could schools learn to help for the young people having this extra dynamic in their life they're navigating?
That's a really interesting one, actually, and she's 14, so actually they do quite a lot of that they didn't used to do when I was at school, much more frequently, which I generally think is quite a good thing, because it gets you used to rising. Yes. And so on a very basic practical level, one thing that we did need to do eventually was to enable my older daughter, and she can use on the inside, but we can use on the outside, obviously, for safety. But I was never a fan of locks on doors. I don't like that in the house. But yes, it became essential because my other daughter is very loud and very destructive. And yes, she needed her own quiet space. And so she, yes, needs to be able to think, actually, no one's going to burst in and pull out all of my beautifully arranged books or all, yes, of my lovely. So that's something that has really helped her to, and it shows, I think it shows a level of respect from us to say, look, we really understand you need your own space. And I always knock, yes, before I go in, making sure that she has her space respected, really. And we've also been lucky enough to be able to create a really lovely desk space for her, and just making sure that she's got all the things she needs, so she's got a really lovely space to work in, and she's fortunate enough to have a bedroom big enough that she can have a desk in there, so that is somewhere she can escape to. She also has, quite interestingly, with some of her friends, gone to the library in the middle of the city to do some revision there, and they just get a load of snacks. I'm not sure how much revision goes on, there's probably quite a bit of chatting, yes, but it's quite a nice thing to do. So she's done that a bit as well. And yeah, in terms of what schools can do, I think it is absolutely acknowledging, and I guess it's a sibling or perhaps a parent, but yeah, making sure that they have been identified as a young carer, and I think just talking to the children about what they might need. And a bit of extra support around it, I suppose, whether that might be a space at school that they could stay on and you know, do some revision or revision clubs or homework clubs, maybe just encouraging those children to make use of that so that they do get that peace and quiet that they need to be able to do that. I think if my child had her way, she'd be like, oh yeah, give us like longer deadlines, and yeah. I'm not really sure that is I'm not a massive believer in adaptations like that, just because I think, you know, we've got to meet deadlines, and we all have challenging circumstances. So there is an element of enabling, I suppose, a degree of resilience. So enabling the person to think, right, well, what do I need to do to put in place to make sure that I do this, rather than I can't do it, this is not an, you know, and you know, yeah, using it as an excuse, which I'm sure that if given half the chance, my daughter would love to be able to use that as a don't get my homework type of excuse. But
absolutely.
Yeah, so it needs to be done, and what do I need to help me get it done? Is probably where I would start with that. But yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And it will be something that we have to navigate as those GCSEs.
I think like what was important to me there was, like you said, looking at a space in the home, which is mine, because it made me really think, like you said, you know, with locks on the doors, it wasn't something that felt comfortable for you. And we always are cautious about making sure if there is anything where we're needing to consider more restrictions or that space in the home, the fire service knows. So we always ask where possible parents are able to have that with the fire service, so they know that there's a child in the home with some additional needs, that they are then flagged. And if we are having to consider that, actually, like there may be that lock on the door, like you said, for the bedroom, for space at the fire service, or where, just for that protection as a family. But there's something, like you said, about the beautifully arranged books and how devastating that would be, that you come in and it's all gone. How, you know, it is making, how do I keep space out? That beautiful desk, something that's mine, that is my space, is so huge in itself, because your life can be shared so much with your sibling. And just creating something that's mine is, I think, really important, because hearing from siblings where they have had things or their makeup on, and it's just so hard for them to have that space that they've got, because we know young people, especially as they go to teenage years, it's space for them is really important. And like you said, even knocking on the door, then just going in and going, I'm here, it's needed. I think it's really needed for them to have that. And I think with school, like you said, there is a balance of, we do, life keeps throwing challenges up, but with some compassion and understanding, and how do we create that without going, you don't have to, because life is still going to continue, but what adjustments can be made to help you is really important to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I wondered, Sharon, you also talked about fun, and just wondered, what can you have any moments you share where you, like you said, because there's things you aren't able to do, but I imagine there's things that you do have that you share, which is fun too, together as a family?
Yeah, I guess a lot of those experiences often take place in our house.
Yeah.
And we're very lucky to have a nice garden, and sometimes that, because I think that's probably the place we can all be most relaxed, because no one has to have an eye on my daughter for, you know, any danger she might get into. So that means I can give proper attention to both girls. And so, yeah, that might look like splashing in a paddling pool, or mucking around, or mucking around in the garden, or chasing around the garden, or riding a scooter around the garden. And those kind of little small are really special. And and then we do, and so yes, those are kind of, and actually when we go on holiday as a family, that's really nice. When we always stay in the UK, and we normally have a holiday cottage, and just being all together in that environment's lovely. And then we do also do some very special things just for my older daughter, so she gets to spend time either with both of us or one of us. So we just make sure that we do things like, she was taken abroad to Greece last year. My husband took her to be with some of his family. So while we can't go abroad as a family, we've been able to do those kind of things. And we were very, very, very lucky last year to get to go to see Taylor Swift. And so I, at the Eras Tour, so I worked so hard to try and get tickets, and ended up staying up all night one night, and managed to somehow get tickets at the last minute, a week before the concert. Me and my daughter just went, and we stayed in a little guest house, and it was just the two of us, and it was absolutely incredible. So, and those, I mean, the two things I've described there are big, 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 you know, big things we'll always remember, but it's lots of little things we do. So we do try and have that time for her and for us, which and in some ways we're almost, we can be a bit of a team of three carers for our daughter. So she sort of, she has grown up very quickly, but I hope in a positive way. And the other thing that we will do for the three of us is make sure we've always got a good TV programme on the go. So our favourite at the moment is Only Murders in the Building, which we're all really enjoying. So and that will be our little bit of time in the evening that the three of us can sit down. So, yeah, we watch something that we all like together. So, yeah.
Amazing. I think that was it, Sharon. It's the little things to the big things. All of them have their place and their value, what you described there in. All of them just are important, but also recognizing your oldest daughter needs to be able to feel you in your parenting as a parent in her own right too. But then there is something coming together as a family, and it just, it felt like it just moves, like it is fluid and movable. But also that wonderful description of three carers, acknowledging throughout this, I've heard that your daughter is a carer, but you then describe her as her daughter, our daughter in her own right. And we honour that and we make that for her too. So it's just, yeah, it was beautifully described and to hear. I wondered, as I could talk to you forever, but I really do appreciate it's a Friday and you need your time. But I did also think, just wanted to ask again, for other parents and carers, about yourself, because do you think that's important, and is it hard ever to make space for yourself to be able and give yourself permission to go, I need to try and find some space for me to keep showing up as I do, because that's going to be really difficult for parents and carers to be able to find that time. And I just wondered what your thoughts were with that, Sharon.
Yeah, it is it's a difficult one, and I think it's something we're sort of continually told by different people. And so in some ways I guess I possibly do more kind of stuff for myself and self-care than perhaps I would if I was a parent of typical children, because I know I have to. So I know that if I don't, that's going to be a problem. And I suppose the thing that I've discovered, this was through COVID, was exercise, really. And that for me has been absolutely massive. And so I started with running, and I have always hated running. I've never thought of myself as a runner. And just one day I got so stressed out with being sort of stuck in the house with COVID, I thought, I'm just going to go for a run because everyone else goes for runs, so I'm doing it. And I have just managed to keep that up, and go for a run at least a couple times every week. And then the other thing, I was able to join our local gym and access classes, which have been amazing, properly life-changing, because I love, for, and again, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but for me, the group exercise, that everyone being bound together, and we've all got different stuff going on, but just all being bound together and doing something often really challenging. So it might be lifting some weights or, and really pushing ourselves. I find it so uplifting. So, and we are very, both me and my husband are very, very protective over that exercise time. So we always make sure that we get to do that, really. It's a bit of a non-negotiable. And the other thing that we've done for well-being is I take a drug called sertraline, which is an antidepressant. I took it initially when I had postnatal depression after I had Polly, which is unrelated to any sort of disability, but that was when I first took that medication, and it was so helpful for me. And then when things started to get very stressful with Polly, it's really helped my anxiety. And I see it very much as a tool in a much bigger package of things. And I'm also super, super lucky to be able to do counselling every month, which we're very lucky to have some budget for that. So we're able to do that, and that has been enormously helpful. So I kind of see, yeah, I have quite a package of self-care. And it's super, super important to me. And I appreciate that it's not, there are lots of budget and time constraints, and it's not always easy for people to do that. So I definitely don't mean to say everyone just go and do all this stuff, because it's not always open to everyone. People who might have disabilities of their own, or you know, maybe in a single parent household and don't have someone to just say, can you watch the kids, I'm going to go for a run. So I do appreciate that that's really difficult for some people. I would say actually there's some great, I really did like Yoga with Adrienne on YouTube. That's really good. She's just a really good yoga teacher, and that's a quite a nice accessible one that can be done from home. And I did that a lot during COVID. There's loads of lovely yoga workouts on there, which is always really nice.
I think that's it, Sharon. It's about, it's not a negotiable. And we put, like you said, you are totally acknowledging that where you are able to make those spaces to do these things, but you're not saying everyone has the ability to do that. But what it is about recognising that there are extra things, I can't think of the right word apart from things, but like extra things you need to do in life because of the extra needs you have with your child. And then you have your child who is a sibling, so there is extra things that you go, I'm doing to be able to do that. I need to look where I can look after myself. And I think that's the bit that's really important. It's going, what can I do to look after myself? Because if that's really important to show up in other areas of my life, got to look after myself. And it's, what can I do and how can I do it? That's what's to me really important, because that's the thing we see with often parents and carers, is they push themselves so far down that they lose their sight of, I'm important in my own right too. And that really is the bit that I find really heartbreaking, because I'm like, you're important, but that can be difficult to actually see and recognise in yourself.
Yeah.
I wondered, Sharon, finally, what's your hopes for siblings for the future? What do you hope for them as a parent? If you could have that wish, that hope for them, including your daughter, what do you hope? It's so big, but just what comes naturally to you when I say hope for siblings, what would you hope for them?
I think early recognition of their status as a sibling, I think. And I think that comes both in within the family, but actually externally, I think is really important, because often siblings will be watching a queue of professionals coming in and out the door for their sibling, and no one's asking about them. They're just walking past them. And I just think, yes, having that early, you're a sibling, we get this is hard, here's some stuff that we can do to help. I mean, this is obviously in an ideal world with a blank checkbook, and also courses like the one that you've recently put on. And I specifically say courses, I mean, I don't know if you would describe it as a course, but what I really liked about it was the structure and the purpose of each session was really carefully thought about and marked out. And I think my daughter would have got a whole lot less from it if it was a general play session with siblings and we're all going to do some arts and crafts and isn't that lovely. I think she'd have found that quite difficult. And what I think you guys did, and obviously I wasn't in the sessions, but what I can imagine happened was you built a framework to enable conversations. And I think that's really powerful, because you can just, you know, stick a load of siblings in a room together. They're not going to talk about those things, they're going to talk about Taylor Swift or whatever else. Which is fine, and very, very important topics of conversation. But I think what you did with something that was very structured, and it was staffed by psychologists, you know, these are people that are professional people, and I think it was, yeah, I think it was absolutely brilliantly done. I think a fantastic intervention. So that's very specific, very tailored, very well thought through intervention on top of some general recognition would be what I hope for siblings. And I think we're very lucky to have been able to access it. It's not something that I've heard of in other areas. So as soon as I got that letter through, I strongly encouraged my daughter to attend, even though naturally, like many teenagers, she was like, oh, I don't know, I can't be bothered. Yeah. And I'm so pleased we did.
I think that's it. I think there's part of me when you said about a blank check, but there's something that I think as professionals we can take away from that doesn't expand on any cost that, like you said, when we come into the home, we see you as a family, and the family includes the siblings in the impact of it. So like we said at the beginning, just seeing and hearing and going, would they like to meet me? Would they like to know what I do? Do they have any questions about what their sibling may have? Having that and just going, I see you, is huge. Signposting to what resources we have. I think there's also elevating this profile up about saying that siblings are important and we need to be recognising them, and what can we do? What can commissioners do to help them? And I think, like you said, the sibling group, we brought so many other professionals in our team, into our support workers, to nurses that were registered in other professions, to assistant psychologists. But like you said, the way in which it was cultivated in, it was, like you said, activities that brought a conversation, or physical activities that didn't always mean necessarily they had a pressure to talk, to them being able to relax and just be them. And so it had this ebb and flow. But when you saw, what struck me was when you said about that connection, where there was a young person who connected with another young person who you could see in their eyes, they looked like, or your sister or brother does that suddenly. And that was the shift for me. Or the first time you saw the smile between the teenagers when they're like on the phone when they first come in, and we're like, so cool, and we're not going to talk. And then they just share a giggle or something together. And like you said, you start seeing that relationship, and just then they might drop in without about their sister or brother, or it's that connection suddenly, like you said, of not being alone, and permission to be able to talk in a space about what my life's like without judgment too, just felt so huge. And I think there's always things that we can learn, and always things we can get better, some at a cost, and some is as simple as when you come through my door, see us all, give us space to be able to, what all of us are impacted in our own way. And that's just huge in itself.
Absolutely.
Sharon, thank you so much for coming on. It has been such an incredible, insightful conversation, with resources that we will be able to share. We'll think about where there is sibling support that we can look at to be able to signpost families. And yeah, it would be wonderful, maybe if you have space, to come onto a podcast talking about your daughter and a parent in your writing that way too, because that would be, yeah, some bits that just came through that I'm like, oh, I know there's going to be parents and carers who are going to find it so valuable in what you've shared. So thank you.